Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hillenberg. For this special Christmas edition, I am delighted again to be able to speak to Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital, one of the UK's best and finest small and mid-cap investors. So welcome, Christopher.
Thank you so much. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, it's been a pretty tough 2023, but we've managed to get through it. And now that inflation is starting to cool, we've had central banks last week, both the Fed, the ECB and the Bank of England, indicating that maybe they've stopped sort of raising rates, and the market's expecting rates to come down sometime next year in the various locations. So putting all that together, what's your sort of outlook for your sort of like sweet spot of small and mid caps and particularly special situations as we look into 2024 after a bit of battering in 2023?
Okay, well, I think the first point is that people who expect interest rates to normalize where they've been over the last 10 years, I think are going to be in for one hell of a shock. Yes, I think rates could come down, but they're going to be considerably higher than they've been for many, many years, not least of all because both the United States, UK, and to a lesser extent, Europe, or some European countries, are just as bad, have got massive debt rollovers. We're still borrowing billions and billions and billions, and we're trying to unwind quantitative easing. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be no shortage of government debt for people to buy anytime soon.
Yeah.
As it relates to markets, I think if you look at the United Kingdom, which I think most people would be interested in, you know, there's still some big headwinds. So, for example, something like 20 billion a month of mortgages have got to be rolled over every month the next two or three years. If you basically make the assumption they're going to get rolled over at a 300 basis point increase in interest rates, you know, that's a massive impact. $7, $8, $9 billion coming out of you know, consumers' pockets. The other factor that's continuing is that even with interest rates coming down a bit, they present, you know, a very attractive alternative to equity markets when people think, you know, I can lock money in at, you know, 5%, you know, guaranteed by the British government.
Yeah, no, I've done that myself for two. I bought 16-month gilts at 5%. I treated myself because I haven't had any interest for 15 years.
So, and I hope you bought gilts with a very low coupon, because as you know, if you make a capital gain on gilts at maturity, that's tax-free.
Yeah, I put them in my ISA and my SIP, so it's all tax wrapped. Sort of like, didn't matter whether it was, I got income free, tax free, and I get capital gains. But you're right, if I'd done it outside of a SIP or ISA, then I'd have done it at a really low interest rate. You're right.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, believe it or not, including, you know, some fund managers.
I don't believe that, Christopher.
Sadly, it's true.
So in terms of the actual economy, they've obviously got a number of still headwinds. However, having said that, sort of like in the small cap, and particularly on, you know, sort of AIM, and, you know, we've had a splurge of M&A activity recently, which suggests that obviously there's a lot of undervaluation there, and also that a lot of private equity wants to get ahead of the game in terms of if there is going to be a rebound next year in sort of small caps. And I know you've got one in your portfolio. I mean, you've done really well out of, you know, all things sort of M&A this year, but we also got sort of Pendragon. So I don't know whether you could talk through that and also more broadly the M&A theme and how you see that sort of playing out for next year.
Okay, well, I think one of the trends that's been in place this year is companies come in with inline results or even slightly better results. You don't get much upside. And if they come in with a mistake or a miss, you get killed.
Mm.
So if you, the market is very bifurcated. There's the market and then there's the companies that are being taken over, where you're getting good premiums. But if you're not in those stocks because you're unlucky or just hasn't worked for you, then you've got some real, real problems with the rest of the portfolio.
Yep.
Now, the trend to acquisitions is continuing. So again, you've got another issue. If you look at the market where, you know, we're losing, better or worse, say 70, 80 companies a year through acquisitions and or failure. But new flotations, as we both know, are almost unheard of.
Yep.
And it's not exactly helped by the fact that, you know, the most recent one was cab payments of any size, which went from, you know, over £3 to 60p so fast people couldn't blink.
Yeah, it got punctured, that one.
Yeah. But the trouble is, if you look at all the IPOs since the last 3 years, something like 90% of them are below the IPO price.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming to the market probably isn't the same quality as what's going off the market. And the number of overall listed companies, as you know, is declined very considerably.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the gene pool for people like me, who's a stock picker, is actually getting smaller.
Yeah.
And you know, that creates difficulties. Mm-hmm. Having said that, that because of all the redemptions and because of the lack of interest in the market, you know, there are stunning bargains out there, in our opinion. And you mentioned Pendragon, and that would be one that would be right at the top of the list.
Mm. And why is that? Well, it's ticked up from about, I don't know, 16p at the start of the year, and it's double that now. It's 32 after receiving a number of interested bids and people falling out. And I think the preferred play at the moment is it Lithia or something like
Lithia's
that?
Yeah, Lithia's got it. It's all over, right?
Yeah.
So basically, the problem with Pendragon is, at this moment of time, nobody loves it. And the reason for that is the biggest shareholder, who owns about 25%, just wants the cash. Institutions are now looking at getting a small stub stock. And, you know, because what the 32p is made up of 24p a share in cash as a dividend.
Yeah.
And a stub stock that is currently trading at 7.5p. Mm-hmm. Which values the stub at £120 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so private individuals don't want a 24.5p dividend, they're going to end up paying 10p in tax on it.
Yep.
Institutions are saying, oh God, I've got, you know, I have this little stub. Do I really want to have to go and buy a lot more Pendragon, the technology company?
Mm-hmm.
And then small cap investors who understand the value of the technology company are saying, well, do I really want to have to put, in our case, 40 million aside, because we own 125 million shares, to get a stub stock worth 7.5 million?
Mm.
In our case, we believe we absolutely do. And we believe when the stub chart starts trading by itself, it has the potential to rise very significantly. Now, why do I say that? Well, the first point is that stub stock was actually valued by an independent bank at 11.5 pence per share.
Mm.
But since then, the news has just got nothing but better. So for £120 million, what do you get? The company has no pension deficit anymore. It has £10 million in cash, £10 million invested in the joint venture in the United States. So valuing the business at £100 million. Now, the UK business is a SaaS-based software business, a market leader, will have done 17 million of EBITDA last year or this year.
Yeah.
So you're buying into a SaaS-based business at 6x historic.
Yeah.
Now, Lithia have already come out and said publicly that since the takeover, they've won a further 12 million of revenues and 6 million of EBITDA. And the company has said publicly that it is comfortable with the UK business by 2027. And it takes time to install this software and train people. So 2027, 27 million of EBITDA UK business.
Wow.
So what do you value it? And, you know, when we met the management, they also said they thought they could actually beat that. Mm. Because one of the problems software business had when it's part of Pendragon was that other dealers were reluctant to use them because they were concerned that Pendragon could somehow see their information and use it to compete against them.
Yeah,
but now it's a pure play independent software business.
Yeah,
but it's way better than that. The American joint venture, Lithia basically spends $100 million a year on software. Lithia owns 51% of the JV, and Pendragon owns 49%. Management in their meeting with us said they believe the Lithia revenues alone by 2027 would be $60 million of revenues, $30 million of EBITDA, and wow, say $15 million to the joint venture, another £12 million. So by 2027, you could have a software business making, let's just round it up to £40 million.
Yeah.
You know, what does SaaS software businesses trade for?
At least 10 times, 12 times, 14 times?
12 and a half to 15 times. In America, it's way more than that.
Yeah.
And of course, Lithia are hoping that they can attract other US dealers to go onto the software platform. So what we're all we're really talking about, getting from 17 million to 40 million, 18 million of that has already been achieved, either by orders already in the United Kingdom or the Lithia joint venture. So we think this stub could easily go from 7.5p to 30 to 40p over a four-year period.
Yeah, no, I was just doing the maths myself. You strip out the cash, if you're buying it for 100 million and then it trades at about 12 times EBITDA in 2027, and with 40 million of EBITDA, you get naught. We get about 500 mil, so you're 5x your money, haven't you? So yeah, it's 5x7 is easy. Even I could do that, 35p. I see why you've got a bit of a smile on your face there. And this is a podcast.
Well, I think the answer is it goes back to not many small cap fund managers are fortunate enough to have the sort of liquidity that they can put, you know, 40 million aside for a few months to get the 7.5 million.
Yeah.
And by the way, the deal's already been approved by the CMA. The only outstanding issue is the FCA, and that's expected to be achieved within the next 2 or 3 weeks. It had to be reviewed by the FCA because obviously motor dealers actually lend money.
Yeah, okay. So I get it. In terms of the actual, it's getting ahead of before they pay the dividend. That's what you're saying, isn't it? Because it's a bit of a pain for fund managers, and therefore they're going to, if anything, they'll get interested when the stub starts trading on its own once the dividend is paid out, because they don't need to then park, you know, 14 million of cash or whatever it is. So if investors are interested, the best time is ahead of that dividend payment, the ex-div day, I suppose.
Yeah. So, but to make it work, you've therefore got to put it either in your ISA or your SIP.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
You can't have this in a fund that pays taxes, because otherwise you get killed.
Yeah. Okay. You've just given me a very good idea there, Christopher. Given my guilt are in my sips and my ices, I might be doing a switch play there. So, there might be a swap over Christmas and New Year.
Anyway.
Okay, that's brilliant. Let's move on to another sector. We've got life science and healthcare. Obviously, this is one of your real specializations, and you've got a fantastic track over decades in this area. Let's start with Spire Healthcare, which is, you know, a private sort of like hospital operator, but sort of branching out into GP surgeries and also into sort of like mental health and this sort of stuff as well. And I guess it's a real beneficiary of elective procedures coming back, and people can't get an operation in the NHS like my dad and the rest of my family, and therefore you've got lots of private players. What's your sort of your latest on Spire? Because it's not cheap.
I think it's a really, really simple story, Spire. It's stuffed full of assets.
Yeah.
Its largest shareholder, they would either want to buy it or sell it. It makes no sense to have a 30% shareholding in it. And it really stacks up on fundamentals. So earnings per share this year are expected to double, but not to a lot. So next year, they're doubling again to nearly 11p, with about a 30-40% increase projected into 2025.
Right.
Historically, this stock has traded about 9.5 times EBITDA. It's trading now at 8x24 and just over 7x25.
Yeah.
So it's all going in the right direction. They've returned to the dividend list. Again, it's modest, but at least it's there now. It's cheap as a multiple. As I said, it's stuffed full of assets and freehold properties. And we believe those freehold properties are very conservatively valued in their books. So it's barely trading at a premium to tangible book anyway. The problems of the NHS aren't going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
The backlogs. And the management is being now massively more proactive in how it's using its resources. So low margin stuff like facelifts, shall we say.
That's another thing I need maybe over Christmas.
Are being phased out in favor of, you know, of hip and knee operations.
Yeah.
Where there's much more value added, much more profit per hour in the operating theater.
Yeah.
So that they're kind of doing probably an unkind thing, but a 10 entertainment where they're saying, actually, we've got a hospital now. What do we put in our hospital, which maximizes the value of the revenues for the benefit of that hospital?
Yeah. Product mix, basically, optimizing it.
It's exactly right. They're starting to optimize the product mix.
Yeah.
And you put that together with something that's just fundamentally cheap anyway, you know, well backed by assets. What's not to like?
Well, what's the likelihood of this one getting taken out by sort of like an infrastructure private equity guys?
Well, we're surprised it hasn't been taken out, to be totally
honest.
Certainly, when we bought this, we didn't think it would be around at Christmas, but...
Okay, yeah. The problem
but my point is, even if it's around next Christmas, you know, there's real value in this business. Yeah. There's no takeover premium in this business. You know, it's trading at a discount to where it's historically traded.
The problem when
I would argue it's a better business today.
Yeah. I would agree. As I say, the problem I have when I interview you, Christopher, is you come up with so many of these ideas that I have to swap my portfolio out whenever we finish. Now, another one, just moving again to NIOX. Now, I know it's been a home run for you guys, and I should have bought this one years ago. Well, I think you mentioned it first over 3 years, 3 years ago to me at about 25p, and I was stupid, but hey, such is life. What's your latest on this one? Because it's just firing on all cylinders, got a shed load of cash. It does asthma diagnostics, doesn't it? And it's sort of like...
It does Phion testing, which measures the nitrogen in your breath.
Yeah.
Which is important to know for your medics. It's a unique business. It's got 95% of the world market. It's got technology, which is world leading in accurate measurement. And it's really still only penetrated 5 or 6% of the world market. Mm. We like the stock a lot, but to be truthful with you, it's no longer cheap.
Yeah.
You know, if you take even next year's numbers and adding back the corporate overhead, which would disappear in the event of an acquisition, you're still looking at about 16 million of EBITDA.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a market cap today of about, let's work it out, 260 million.
Yeah, okay.
And you've got about 20 million in cash.
Yeah.
However, you have got an asset which people don't know about, which is a massive tax loss, which means this company is very unlikely to ever be paying taxes.
Yeah, that's the old Circassia business.
Correct. Mm. And that cash, so the consequent result is the EBITDA and the cash increase pretty much in line. The cash conversion yeah. business is very, very good. Mm. Now, if you look out to 2025, but that's a long way away, mm. you know, you can probably get to 20 million with corporate ad backs. And by the end of 2025, you'd probably end up with cash, I would guess. Well, the trouble is they're doing special ad backs, but yeah. you know, that could easily be 40 million by then. Mm. So, you know, if you're a long-term investor, there's value here, but this is not going to do in 2024 what it's done in 2023, which, as you know, has been one hell of a ride. I think I think we're up over the last 12 months nearly 90% or 85%.
Yeah, when you first started piling into this, it was 25p, wasn't it? So it's nearly tripled your money since you originally got in. And just in terms, just more generally, when you have a home run like this and you've almost tripled your money, I mean, does Harwood sort of ever take top slice or take a bit of profit off the table? Because it must be a super large position now.
Yeah, it is a very large position now, particularly in Oryx, which has done very well out of it.
Yeah.
And it's been one of the reasons why Oryx has had such a good year this year, although it also benefited from the takeover of friends like Crestchick.
Yeah, no, thanks for doing that. Again, that was another one you sort of like helped me with.
And I don't know whether you remember, but we were quite big into a thing called On the Market.
Yeah, they've got to, you're right.
And we were lucky. We were just buying City Pubs when that one went. Mm. We had Seraphim.
You've had Smooth as well.
Smooth as well. Yeah, there's been a whole string of them. So,
yeah, I know.
You know, it's what's for next year.
So when it's a top slicing, I mean, it's one of those as a principle. Do you ever do it? Because
we do. We absolutely do it.
Yeah.
No, for sure. But I suppose that our view on NIOX is that it's a strategically valuable business.
Mm.
And if we get lucky, someone will come and pay a big price.
Mm.
And if we don't get lucky, it'll earn its way in over 18 months into being fair value or cheap again.
Yeah, okay. It will catch up to its multiple.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And on top
okay.
of it, as you said, it's throwing off a lot of cash. It's going to return to the dividend list. As you know, it did a special dividend as well. It could easily afford to pay the dividend going forward. And, you know, the management there is, in our opinion, outstandingly good.
Mm.
And you know, if we could ever get into consumer, which we wouldn't be the right person to do, but if we could find a partner to take us into consumer, where people could do the testing in their home, that would be a game changer. But I'm not saying that is likely anytime soon, but it's something that I'm sure they're thinking about.
Yeah. Okay, good. Brilliant. Okay, let's move to another one. We've got EKF, which was obviously a bit of a COVID dialing in 2020 and 2021 and generated a lot of cash and then moved into this new project, enzyme production for food in the industry and the pharmaceutical industry out in the States over in Indiana. And I think it's had a few sort of startup issues. What's your sort of latest on this? Because the shares have come back, but seem rock solid between 25 and 30p.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this now it's all been overdone. I think everyone completely forgot there's a real business sitting in EKF.
Mm.
you know, we're a global leader in testing for hemoglobin. We're a major player in testing for diabetes. We're a global leader in testing ketone acidosis. And there's no question that the enzyme, well, the money we put into the new enzyme facilities, which is we've created a world-class facility now. I mean, we really have.
Yeah.
Has taken longer than we expected. And that was just because you got the equipment there, you still got to run batches before the clients will start to use you. So they're now gaining clients. A lot of the excess cost base had to be taken out because as COVID disappeared, you know, we had to right-size the company again, or Julian had to right-size the company again. But now I think we're in a very, very good place.
What's the underlying demand like for that enzyme? Because that's the big question, is that it seems though it's put a lot of, you know, sort of, equipment in there, and it looks great. It's first class. And I know Julian has publicly said he's signed his first order. But the underlying demand, because I think...
Underlying demand is very good.
Is it?
But you've got to prove to the clients that it works.
Right.
Okay, that you can develop their enzyme. Yeah. Basically, if you look at the enzyme market, there are very big companies like Eli Lilly that produce large batches of enzymes for the food industry.
Yeah.
There's then laboratories that produce very small amounts of enzymes for research. There's a massive little niche, which is underserved, of medium-sized producers of enzymes.
Right, okay.
And enzymes have very good margins.
Yeah.
They're complicated to make, but when you make them, they have very good margins. And we already have some good customers in enzymes like Roche.
Yeah.
And as you said, new customers are now starting to arrive. So I think you'll see EKF come out with, you know, forecasted line, I would believe.
It's quite interesting because the forecasts, I think Julian's been, sounds as though ultra conservative, because he stripped out all of the enzyme potential sales for this year, which makes total sense given the problems. But there isn't much in there for 2024 either. And if the underlying demand is, there must be a sort of like tilting towards sort of quite underlying confidence that the performance is going to be at least in line next year for 2024 and 2025 as those new customers test those batches, those sample batches, and then want to put orders onto it.
We would hope so.
You have the same view, you say, sorry.
I said we would hope so.
Oh, okay.
Let's say we believe so.
Okay.
But, you know, it's... You don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, do you?
No, particularly given what's happened. I totally get it. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. Okay, well, that sort of definitely gives me a good picture of the sort of status. And I'm with you. It's a rock solid underlying core business that's probably worth more than the actual share price as it is. So you get all the enzyme upside. So looks good.
I mean, yes, I personally would believe that our core business is worth more than the current share price.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, and the core business, by the way, is still growing nicely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay. Let's move to kidney diagnostics. You've got two here. You've got Renalytics, which I know we've talked about over the last 3 years. Again, it did very well out of COVID and has sort of like struggled a bit just recently in terms of financing and FDA delays. It does sort of early stage kidney diagnosis of sort of health and, you know, out in the States, I think does level 1 to 3. And then we've also got Verici, which does prognostics and diagnostics for the stage 4, which is basically kidney transplants patients. So do you want to take us through Renalytics first? Because I think it's going through a financing round.
Well, Renalytics, if you told me we could get FDA approval, reimbursements, real world evidence, I'd have a share price where it is today. I just wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what people are concerned about is, you know, clearly at some stage, this company will run out of money, and how do we fix that problem before it does? And this is something the board is working very actively on to make sure that does not happen. And in that context, you know, something like Verici did as a possibility, bringing in new investors a possibility. But it's really tough out there. It's yeah. not easy to raise money for life sciences at the moment if you're not making money.
Yeah, I think with Verici, they've just basically got that big deal, haven't they? With
Sarah pulled an absolute blinder on that.
Yeah. Thermo Fisher, isn't it, for Clarava?
Correct. And ultimately, they're going to have two other products. And I would expect that they will look to do, and I don't know this, but what I would hope that they would do would be look to, again, outsource those products to people who've got, you know, substantial marketing organizations, because the cost of creating a US marketing organization is way beyond the resources of a Verici.
Yeah.
You know, they've got two other exciting products, and to go with, you know, phase payments and then a long-term royalty, you know, is not a bad way to go, because then you can cut back the cost of running the business to very little. And just take royalty payments for a long period of time. And there's always the possibility that if Thermo was to, you know, take a royalty on one of the other products, you would come back and just take the whole thing, because it would make sense.
Yeah, I've got this one.
That's me speculating. It's not.
No. It is. I mean, let's be clear about it. We all sort of have our speculation and our view, but I'm with you. I actually think Thermo Fisher is kicking the tires on the technology, transferring that Clarava test into its labs, having a good look at it, making sure that they're very happy with it. And once that's occurred, then they've probably de-risked any of their internal due diligence. And let's wait and see. But I think both of them are just, you know, Renalytics both of them seem to have major catalytics. Renalytics, once they've actually got the financing round sorted out, that presumably should underpin the shares. And then Verici, in terms of, they should hopefully, if things moved ahead, they could be EBITDA break even by the back end of next year.
I don't know what the forecasts are, to be truthful, but yes, that is, you know, the product is a revolutionary product. You've now got one of the world's largest pharma companies behind it.
Yeah.
You know, they have every incentive to promote it because they don't have this product.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, good. Okay, well, let's move on to animal health, pet health. We've got animal care, which I have noticed, actually, over the last few months, Harwood have been sort of like picking up any loose stock on the market. And this one does sort of like, you know, pharmaceuticals and drugs for dogs, cats, horses, some in the dental side, but they're also developing a sort of antibiotic type of stuff in a joint venture. So they seem to have a lot of moving parts there. What's sort of your latest on this one?
Okay, well, I mean, Jenny Winter, we think, is an outstandingly good chief executive. She's done a really good job with this company since she became chief executive. It was a bit of a mess when she inherited, in my opinion. It certainly isn't now. The company, I believe, is now debt-free.
Yep.
EBITDA, somewhere between 14, 15 million this year.
Yep.
So we're trading at 7x. This company is totally unaffected by, you know, the CMA issues with CVS, etc.
Is it? Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, basically, A, it's predominantly a European business, and B, it's a distributor and manufacturer. It has its own proprietary drugs, and it's a distributor of other people's drugs.
Yeah.
So it's much more like a Dechra.
Yes.
Than it is a CVS.
Yes.
So the way we kind of see it is, you've got a good business with a good chief executive growing modestly, but you've got the hope that the new generation of drugs that's being developed, that we won't know whether they're successful probably until 26, 27. If they are, it's a total game changer.
Yeah.
And if they're not, you know, you're buying a business which by then will probably be at 6x EV/EBITDA with a nice cash pile.
Yeah.
So we kind of see this as, well, there's no such thing as a one-way bet, but there isn't a lot of downside.
Yeah.
Because the froth has come out of the stock. I mean, it was nearly 400. Well, it was 400p at one stage.
Yeah.
You know, we're buying at 170, which values the company at little more than 100 million.
Yeah.
I think about 103 million or something like that.
Mm.
You know, with good cash flow, good management. And, you know, my suspicion would be if the drug doesn't work, some private or somebody will want European distribution will take it out anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, and also you look at sort of the poster child of the industry, Zoetis, out in the States. It trades at around 25, 30 times PE, and Animal Care's on 13 times. So there's a bit of difference just on valuation.
Yes, and well, a lot. And as I said, it has good cash conversion. And, you know, no debt. What's not to like, really?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, good. Well, let's move on to another sector.
And I mean, in normal markets, you know, people would have more patience for a company like this.
Hmm.
You know, we're not saying this is going to be a great victory in 2024. But you know, we believe that by 2027, if we get lucky, we could treble our money. And if we don't, we could still make, you know, 30, 40, 50%.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it looks, as I say, you win heads, I win tails, I win. So yeah, you should do well. I'm not, apologies for investors. We've got a bit of background. I'm not sure where that came from, but it was something anyway. I think it was probably Amazon or something like that. We've got now, just turning to industrials. We've got Avingtraz, and I know we've talked about this one before. It's a specialist in, you know, industrial business that it's sort of, you know, done buy and build. It's got expertise in nuclear, on the new nuclear. It has customers like Bill Gates' TerraPower. It also has decommissioning with the storage boxes out in Sellafield. It also does blast-proof doors. And also, on top of all of that, it's got some specialization in healthcare with its Magnetica business, and also with Adaptix as well, which is doing small-form MRI and small-form X-ray. So do you want to take us through your latest on this one? Because obviously, it's putting a bit of investment into its medical side this year. But does
well,
seem
well,
to
have... and next year and the year after, to be truthful with you.
Yeah.
So the way we kind of see this one is the non-medical businesses are, in our opinion, probably worth 25% more than current share price.
Yep, agreed.
And that's the bit we understand.
Yeah.
The medical businesses, you know, if it's true that they can reduce the price of MRI scans by, you know, 50, 60, 70%.
Yeah.
And they're easily portable, and, you know, they would be able to be used with, you know, pets because they're so cheap relative to the alternative now.
Mm.
You know, it just could be the most monster victory. But
yeah,
what we like to, you know, focus on in our thought process is, we're kind of underwritten by the core businesses.
Yeah.
The core businesses are doing well.
You mentioned
last
time.
We expect to sell one or two of them in the near future because,
yeah,
you know, remember, it's a buy, improve, and exit strategy.
Yeah.
So the real issue is, can they find other good acquisitions at favorable prices? Well, you're still in an environment where a lot of businesses aren't doing so well. Mm. The banks are getting more nervous, and actually one of the ways they're trying to hide their profitability is by, you know, calling some of their bad debt in rather than extend and pretend. Mm. So around the current share price, you're underwritten by the core business.
Mm.
And you have the hope or prayer,
yeah,
the medical side works. And then you have a huge victory on your hands.
Hmm.
And you know, the management behind this company proved themselves in the past to be really good at making money. And I think it's tough to bet against them at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the sort of turnover for next year is just south of 140 million. But I know when you talked about it last time, you mentioned they've got this, there's a potential £900 million storage box contract coming out of Sellafield over the next few years. And I know they won't get everything on that at all.
Well, they'd be, you know, they hope to get one third, to put it in context.
Wow. Okay. So when you talk about the core business underpinning the share price, actually that one, if they get that, a third of it, then that's that'll move the dial significantly.
Yes, that's one way of putting it.
what in terms of the sort of the other health, that healthcare upside? I mean, obviously, you know, the management team is really astute. You know, the two Steves, et cetera, they've been doing this as a team for 15, 20 years, and they wouldn't be sort of like, you know, chasing wild goose, sort of like, you know, gooses in the on the Christmas tree, et cetera. What sort of probability would you put on this sort of MRI X-ray? Because you would anticipate, given their track record, it's got to be better than 50-50, because they just wouldn't be going ahead with it otherwise.
Yes, I look, as I said, it's I would hope it's better than 50%.
Yeah, exactly. I was being cautious.
But
yeah, okay.
As I said, look, they've got a good track record. They know what they're doing. They, you know, they own big positions in this company themselves personally.
Yeah.
So it seems unlikely that they only think it's a 50-50 chance, because they're putting real, you know, their own real money behind this thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know, this isn't a management team that doesn't have a significant interest in the equity of the business.
Agreed, yeah. Okay. All right, okay, let's move on to B2B sort of media, business services and stuff. We've got Centaur Media, which does sort of like, I think it owns The Lawyer, and it's been going through a bit of a sort of like a turnaround over the last 3 years, seems to have successively done that. It's stuffed full of cash, the shares have come off. What's your latest on this one? Because Swag Mukherjee, the CEO, who you highlighted a few years ago, seems to have done a good job, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue here is, as you said, well, it's actually just absurd, isn't it? If you look at the market cap, I think it's 55 million quid.
Yeah, that's right.
Cash is, I think, give or take 11, 12 million.
Yeah.
Even with a slowdown in advertising this year, they're still talking about 10 million of EBITDA.
Mm.
So do the math. And then, yeah, you know, if you say the central costs are 2 or 3 million, which they probably are, you're buying the businesses at, you know, less than 4x. It's absolutely potty.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they do, and they got that MBA, haven't they, as well, that marketing MBA course, which seems to be knocking the ball out of the park with people like Unilever as clients.
Yeah, I mean, e-learning is deemed to be a very attractive sector. I mean, we own an e-learning business somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're expecting to get, you know, probably 12x EBITDA for it.
Mm.
You know, The Lawyer is dominant market leader. It's all digital now. Don't know what that's worth, but again, these assets are worth way more than 4x.
You're right. Yeah, it does look totally mispriced. Get it? Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, well, let's move on to consumer. I know you've had some successes with Ten Entertainment and stuff. We've got in there perhaps a bit more is going through a turnaround. We've got Hostmore, which owns the old TGI Fridays franchise in the UK. It was spun out, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago. And I guess this one is a sort of like, how do you view sort of like the success rate of turnarounds? Because it needs to do a bit of a refinancing. And I guess it's the sort of Charlie Munger test. And they say, you know, invert. What does success look like? And is it possible to achieve it?
Okay, well, we spent a lot of time with the management on this one because this has been a mistake. We've definitely lost money on this.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, A, they put their own money where their mouth is, and B, it's actually quite credible. I mean, what they ultimately believe is they can get the EBITDA back to over £20 million, and that's real EBITDA.
Yeah.
That they can slowly but surely reduce the debt down.
Mm.
And you know, this is like a public leverage buyout. Basically, it's a public leverage buyout with almost a turnaround attached to it. you know, they're talking of taking 6 million out of the cost base. You know, 22 million of EBITDA is not so crazy, given, believe it or not, it was 22 million in 2021.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they can achieve this, you know, this stock could easily double or treble, but this one's certainly not for widows and orphans.
Yeah. Well, it's only got, it's got an EV of roughly just over 60 million. So you're right. If they can do 20 million of EBITDA, then that would only put it on a 3x multiple.
Correct. And if the debt's coming down and that equity is, and that sort of multiple goes up, you can see the swing on the equity could be very dramatic.
Yeah.
But we got this one wrong. I think our average purchase price is about twice the current share price.
Well, it could be one of those. It could be one of those winners for you in 2024. I guess the big sort of like catalyst is a bit like Renalytics, is that financing, isn't it? If it comes through and it's not.
Well, we think from our discussions with them that they haven't got a problem on financing.
Okay.
I mean, one of the theses we had at one stage was they would come back and ask for some more money. We don't actually think they will now.
Wow.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but.
Yeah.
They're definitely doing their best to avoid it if they can.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. Well, that's one we're watching out for. Now, just moving on to sort of technology enabled services, we've got RedCentric. And we haven't spoken about this one before, but it's a sort of like a IT sort of outsourcers and managed services. But it also bought SunGard's data centers, I think, a couple of years ago for about 22 million quid. And that's quite an interesting play because it pushes up its gross margins and its recurring revenue streams, I guess. And it trades at a pretty, I think it's a pretty reasonable valuation, actually. I'm just having a quick look myself. Yeah, it's sort of like, well, 8x EBITDA, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with that EBITDA number because if you take the IFRS 16 number, it's about 6 million lower.
Right, okay, gotcha. That's the pre one, yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
But having said that, they have taken a huge amount out of the cost base this year. That's both been done by reducing people, but actually also bringing in new equipment, which significantly reduces energy usage. They've capped energy prices at relatively favorable levels. So next year's number of 35 million real EBITDA, we think, is eminently achievable.
Yep.
That should enable them to start paying down meaningful amounts of debt. Because again, this year, they had a lot of CapEx that they needed to put in place to get the thing fit, to get the operations maximized, I suppose.
Yeah, okay. And is that, that's CapEx on sort of GPUs from NVIDIA, is it, like the big hyperscalers, I'm guessing?
Well, no, a lot of the CapEx is better cooling systems.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Yeah, I suppose that's...
I don't think it's quite AI, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And I guess if you've got any... Is a sort of the, what's the strategic logic of going into data centers? Is it because you win the managed service contract, and rather than paying a Amazon or a you know, Microsoft Azure to be able to do the hosting, you do it in house, and therefore you win on both sides?
Yes, and in fact, I mean, the data center business in itself is a good business. No, I mean, it's fundamentally a good business.
Yeah, so, okay.
And Peter Brotherton has proved in the past that he's actually very good at cutting costs. Remember, he had to turn around RedCentric all those years ago.
Right.
I mean, the problem is the business then plateaued, wasn't growing organically, so they made the acquisitions. But what they now seem to have achieved actually is some organic growth as well.
Yeah.
As just purely acquisitions.
Well, I must admit, when he's got sort of data centers and it's got sort of like recurring revenue streams, it's currently on a sort of 7x EBIT margin. So not 7x, 7%, 7 or 8% EBIT margin, which frankly should be a lot higher.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't. I would say it should be anyway. If you're making 70% or 60-70% gross margin.
Well, I think the point is that, yeah, you're right, but the EBIT margin is going up a lot to 13, 14% when you start looking at the 25 numbers.
That's exactly what I meant. There's a lot of self-help and a lot of it's efficiency story. You haven't got to win too much business to drive your bottom line, to double your bottom line quite quickly.
Well, and a lot of that is a result of the CapEx that's been put in today.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, in this year.
Yeah, okay.
So taking the asset, making the asset infinitely more efficient, which is what Brotherton has done. And I said, protecting the company from spikes in energy prices, because the problem with data centers is they use up a lot of energy, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And so if you can't control that, you don't want, and it's hard to pass the pricing on.
Yeah.
So matching the buyer and the seller of the energy together is what he's done, and creating a margin. It's a sort of a big move forward for the company in the 25 calendar year, which starts in March on April the 1st next year.
Okay, good. Okay, well, another one in that sector is Maintel, and that's a sort of provider of cloud and managed communication services. I think sort of like hosted desktop, secure comms, broadband, etc., for public and private companies. It's slightly lower because it hasn't got the data center arm. Gross margins around about sort of 30-35%. It's got a bit of debt, I'm guessing it's a sort of again a bit of a turnaround.
Well, it definitely is. The company got itself in a bit of a mess, and the new chief executive, Carol, came in and has done a stunningly good job of turning this thing around. Next year, you'll start to see the debt starting to fall. I hope we're going to see also some growth in sales next year. We had a bit of sales growth this year, but this year was very much all to do with sorting out the problems that she inherited really at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Now that resulted in some, you know, one-off costs and restructuring costs this year, and getting the creditors back into shape. But we would expect the debt to start falling next year. And I mean, she's done an outstandingly good job, and it's a pretty cheap stock.
Yeah, I mean, I might have got the IFRS wrong, but it looks here if it's on a less than 4x EBITDA.
Let me work that one out. The market cap's at 2043. It's about 4 and a bit, but that falls to about 4x next year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So it's definitely a pretty stunningly cheap. Now moving on to. Restore.
But I mean, very, 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 very illiquid.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
So. I mean, it's this thing almost trades by appointment. I mean, it's hardly surprising. It's a 23-24 million market cap.
Okay, so if you want to buy it, you're going to have to kind of wait until there's a bit of a stock overhang, but something loose, and then you can pick something up, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But you know, relatively small trades would move this thing a lot, I suspect.
Okay. Good. All right. Okay. Well, let's move on to Restore, which does sort of like document archiving. And one of your colleagues in the Harwood stable, Richard Staveley, talked positively about this one about 2 months ago. And he was saying there's a rock star CEO who's come back into the game. What's sort of your latest on Restore? Because again, it's going through a bit of a turnaround. It came off, but the shares have bounced off the bottom.
Okay. Well, the answer is that, you know, within Harvard, we all talk to one another and we all share one another's ideas.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not taking the credit for the Restore idea, which is, in fact, as you correctly said, Richard Staveley's.
Yeah, okay.
I did meet Charles Skinner, the old CEO who's returned, with Richard about 6-8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Monday, perhaps a bit longer. And there's no doubt at all that he's got a clear plan as to how he can materially improve the profitability of this business. And, you know, it's simple things like the head office ballooned from 7 people to 57 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, getting it back down more to size, consolidating some of the facilities, thereby reducing rental costs that can't be done overnight. And just refocusing on the business, not getting distracted by some poor acquisitions that got made. So we think this company will comfortably beat forecasts as we move into 24 and 25. I think it would be disappointing if earnings in 25 weren't 25p. Yep. I have an easy number to remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't so long ago this stock, you know, was a darling trading at, you know, 20 times earnings.
Yeah.
So it only takes you to get back to, say, let's say 12 times earnings.
Mm.
And if you put that in the context of the majority of the business is an Iron Mountain comp. I think that trades at about 30 times earnings.
Yeah.
Because these revenues are very sticky.
Mm.
You know, the stock's about 205 today. I can see it over a 2-year period getting to 300.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
But I'd be really disappointed if it wasn't 300, you know, December 25.
Mm. Yeah, with that sort of recurring revenue stream, then there's a lot of people who potentially buy it, that's for sure, because it's just guaranteed income, isn't it, for years ahead?
Correct.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of this stuff, sadly.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, regulation. You can digitalize it, which reduces a bit, but you can't get rid of it.
Yeah. Now, another one. We'll just move on to interdealer brokers and asset managers. Let's do to TP ICAP. And a big thanks to you, Christopher, because you talked about it about, I don't know, 18 months ago, and I followed you into it. And it's paid handsome dividends and is up about, I don't know, 10-15%. I think it's the world's biggest sort of interdealer broker. It benefits from market volatility, interest rates and energy and commodity volatility.
Gosh, I hope you're up a bit more than 10%, because I mean our average is about 140. Buying at 110.
Yeah, I think I can't remember about 150 I bought. It's 190 currently, but the dividends of its dividend yield of over 6%. So that hasn't been bad.
I mean, even more than that. I mean, brokers are expecting the dividend for next year to be, you know, over 14p.
Okay, yeah.
Well, so we're still yielding 7.
Yeah.
And the story's intact.
You were talking about the Parameta, weren't you? The Parameta data business.
The data business is still growing very nicely. Gaining new verticals. I mean, we believe Parameta, well, it's worth $1 billion every day of the week. Could be worth as much as $1.5 billion, which would be the whole market cap.
Yeah.
One of the problems they've had is that if they tried to divest it, they had to put a lot of businesses together and there were tax issues. And slowly but surely, they're working their way through. And then, obviously, with all this interest rate volatility, the core business is actually doing pretty well, because for years, you know, interest rates were kind of zero, and you know, ranging between zero and zero, which didn't create the volatility. But now you've got volatility in the marketplace. You know, that business is doing well. And if you look at, if you valued it, say, 250 million, you know, that's valuing it at 1x EBITDA.
Yeah.
And Liquidnet, if they can ever turn it around and get it anywhere close to what they paid for it, which was give or take 500 million. So we still think there's a lot of value in there.
Yeah, I've got some of the parts of
the share buyback.
Yeah.
And we would expect them to continue to do share buybacks. And interesting enough, something that might surprise you is this is a business that actually has no net debt. Now, it has debt, but it has no net debt.
Yeah. Because it holds the cash, doesn't it, presumably?
It holds a lot of cash, but it needs that cash for its trading businesses.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, I've got a target price or some of the parts, and I'm reasonably conservative on 290. So I think there's plenty of upside. So thanks for that.
That might be optimistic, but I would certainly hope to see it, comfortably into the twos over the course of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Another one you sort of like talked about, and I followed you in because is Asset Co. And I know you bought quite a few shares at about 35p probably a year ago, and it's trading at about 48. And this is an unbundling play. I think it's run by exec chairman Martin Gilbert, who obviously started as the founder of Aberdeen Asset Management, It's got Global River, which is the asset manager. It's got some cash, and then it's also got 30% of Parmenion. What's your latest on this one?
Okay, well, River and Mercantile, they're slowly but surely winning new business. They did a good deal on an Indian fund the other day.
Yeah.
And all this is designed to get River and Mercantile back into profitability.
Mm.
It's suddenly been a bigger struggle than people had expected. Rise turned out to be a mistake and was cash flow negative, but that's now been sold.
Yeah.
And as you said, Parmenion, they own 30% of Parmenion. And you can argue, I think very easily, that Parmenion is worth more than the whole company by a multiple.
Agreed.
And I think they came out and said that Parmenion was worth somewhere between 70 and 100 million.
That's correct, yeah.
And, we're looking at a market cap of, 60, as you said, and there's cash. So, some of the parts of things very cheap.
Mm. Yeah, no, it looks like an unbundling play, that one, definitely. Okay, good. Another one you've mentioned, which I haven't followed you in yet is Polar Capital, which is basically a tech healthcare specialist asset manager. And I can't believe it seems to have a dividend yield of 10%, actually.
Yeah, that's right. So, look, actually, we have made good money on this thing, and we've also enjoyed the benefit of a dividend.
Yeah.
But there'd been a lot of headwinds for fund managers, and Polar's had those headwinds too.
Mm.
But we actually believe that Gavin Rochussen is an outstandingly good chief executive, that he does intend to build value both for himself and shareholders.
Yeah.
Now, we don't pretend to be very good at high technology. So this gives us a way into technology.
Yeah.
Benefiting from people who understand it way better than we do.
Mm.
And obviously they get to see all these emerging companies. Mm. They're specialists and we aren't. Mm. And to have a portfolio with no exposure to technology makes no sense. Mm. So have a portfolio with some exposure to technology, but it's also yielding 10%, where the technology companies themselves yield nothing. Mm. Makes sense to us.
Mm. I think you're doing yourself a misjustice there, actually, Christopher, because when you've talked about software companies, you're pretty knowledgeable on those. And when it comes to life sciences, I'd say you're the biggest shining light in the UK. So don't knock yourself too much in terms of technology. You'd shoot the lights out compared to most investors like me, I can promise you.
AI stuff is not stuff that we really understand. It's very easy to understand a Pendragon, where it's an established technology, it's a market leader, and it's trading at 6x EBITDA. It's not so easy when it's not going to make a penny in revenue for 5 years or 3 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Okay, good. Well, let's move on to some distributors then. We've got Flowtech Fluid Power, who we've talked about quite a bit, and they've sort of swapped out their CEO. I think they've got Mike England in there now. It seems to be, again, this turnaround taking a lot longer than certainly I think most shareholders were expecting. It's got a bit of debt, but it basically offers services and products as a distributor for pneumatics and for fluid power applications. You'll take us through your latest on this one, because
I think the trouble is people expect things to happen overnight, and in reality they never do.
Mm.
The way we kind of look at it is if someone goes into a business, they find in the first year, they kind of figure out what they need to do and how they're going to do it.
Mm.
The second year, they implement it. The third year, it's apparently abundantly obvious to everybody. And normally, in our world, hopefully in the fourth year, everything's flying and you put the company up for sale and job done.
Yeah.
So I think Mike only arrived middle of the year, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So, he's very much in that first year.
Mm.
We'd expect to see, a some improvement as you move into the tail end of next year, with becoming very obvious the following year. And then him hopefully making his performance bonus as we move into 25. Now, market forecast, you know, the general consensus or the general business plan was to double the EBITDA, I think, by 27.
Yeah.
And then you've got something that's so phenomenally cheap. And I just honestly don't see the downside of the damn thing at the moment, given, you know, we're trading at whatever it's 5.5-6 times EBITDA.
Yeah, yeah.
No, sorry, it's a weeny bit more than that.
I've got 7 times.
Seven. Yeah, 7 times.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the question is, given it's sort of like had a number of management teams and it's got, you know, it's got Roger McDonald also at the, you know, sort of like, or Dow, sorry, at the, who's the, you know, the chairman, et cetera, who knows about sort of industrial distributors. They've had some pretty good managers, but it still hasn't been able to sort of move the dial. And I guess it comes back to that sort of like Warren Buffett thing. Is it a company that's going to beat and defeat management teams, or is it one which can be turned around? There's that catalyst that, as Charlie Munger would say, invert and see where you can get to.
I think the answer is that I may be wrong, but I think the previous CEO was originally the CFO.
Yeah.
And in our experience, sadly, CFOs becoming CEOs on balance tends to be less successful than one might like to think.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
In fact, someone was telling me that if you'd shorted every company that where the CFO had become the CEO, you would actually have quite a good portfolio of shorts.
Yes, gotcha. Yeah, I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it, really? You need a figurehead, you need a leader at the top who can bring people with them in terms of a vision rather than a it may be very good on the numbers, but unless you've got a character who that can win the hearts of its employees and win the hearts, more importantly, also of its customers, then something happens who can, you know, just the rational kind of person isn't going to be able to do that and bring the emotion into that whole selling experience.
Okay, I think part of the problem was, too, that this was a collection of companies which haven't been integrated to the extent they should have been.
Right, okay.
Which in itself creates, you know, another problem. But this, we believe this is actually a fundamentally good business.
Yeah.
All three of us, Stuart likes this stock, I like it's the stock, Richard likes this stock. So kind of this is one the house has really put a major bet on working.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I suggested you send Richard or Stuart at the M6 to these guys and get them sort of like housed up there. Might make an absolute difference. Okay, let's move to Cars, which does is a distributor of sort of animal feed, but also has got quite an interesting engineering sort of robotics business for the energy sector, for nuclear and also for oil and gas. That doesn't seem to be too much synergies between the two. And
well, there's absolutely zero synergies between the two.
Just kidding. And what was also bizarre is that they seem to be putting their results out on Thursday this week. I mean, who does that?
That's a question I can't answer because obviously I'm not responsible for putting the results out on Thursday this week. You're right. It's a bit of a first. Can't explain that one to you. You'll have to ask.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. I'll watch out for the numbers anyway.
In all fairness, I think the issue was they were trying to get them out earlier. And you know, a lot of these auditors these days are just understaffed and they just don't get the job done in time.
Yeah.
But I mean, the way that we see this thing is it's got cash. The pension assets should be enough to meet the pension liabilities, even on a buyout. The agricultural business is in the public domain. It's facing challenges because the herds are declining, but I suspect that's cyclical. And we think there's a very nice nuclear business in there that's very valuable.
There is, yeah, I'd agree. I've had a good look at it. I think that robotics engineering business is very good, actually.
Yeah, and it's tied into nuclear, and there's a lot of money being spent on nuclear, as you know, these days.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Okay. Well, that sounds like it's non-bundling opportunity. It's not. It's something which you'll. It's one of those. What do they call it? Basically,
you know, flowers that will blossom when they split out, or when they realize when that hidden value is realized.
Correct. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to the final sector. We've got house builders. We've got the old, MJ Gleeson, which is an affordable sort of house builder up in the, largely in the Northeast and also around the Midlands. I guess it's you, what's your broader view on that sort of like area? Because you did talk about, obviously, there's a lot of mortgages which you'll be refinancing over the next few years. But the shares came off a lot at the Liz Truss disaster in about a year ago, has now started to move a bit further, but are still pretty cheap, actually.
Well, the thing's trading at a discount book,
yep,
of about 12% tangible book.
Yeah.
It's still a relatively unique house builder to the extent that it focuses on affordable homes for people in the north and east and west of England and a bit into the Midlands.
Yeah.
There's no question the housing market has been tough, but mortgage rates are slowly but surely coming down. And as rentals have gone up on the other side of the equation, logically, people should start buying again where it's affordable.
Yeah.
What's disappointing is that we haven't seen the government come out with sort of a help to buy scheme of some meaningful proportions. And it's a great irony that most of my friends in the house building industry believe they will do better under a Labour government than they are under this Conservative government, which is a bit of a shocker.
Yeah, it is actually. You're right. Yeah, that's a statement, isn't it?
The Conservatives were meant to be the party of home ownership. And now it's very much the Labour Party is talking about home ownership.
Yeah. So, there's a big sort of build to rent though, isn't there? There's a lot of institutional money coming in now, and I think that and there's the affordable, housing associations also need the skills associated some of the house builders to be able to.
This is absolutely true, and all the house builders are benefiting from it.
Yeah,
and there are pluses and minuses. The plus is that you get the money quicker, so you've got less money tied up in inventory. So your churn of housing is faster. The negative obviously is there's less margin.
Yeah.
The negative for the Conservative Party is people who rent are less likely to vote Conservative than owners.
Yeah. It's terrible, isn't it? Okay, good. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think long term, it has great track record, and it's gone through ups and downs before in the past, and it still looks, as you say, it's cheap. It's trading at a discount to net tangible book, and is profitable.
And on top of it, the management still see themselves to be very much a growth house builder, i.e., they do intend to build back up through the 2,000 houses per annum to considerably greater numbers over the next few years. The management team is extremely experienced here. Graham came out of Vistry, and obviously Stefan's been with the company for a long time now as our finance director, and James was our chief executive. So I think we have a completely the right team to deal with the difficult environment we're facing ourselves in.
Yeah.
And as I said, with a clear intention that to become a growth house builder again. And, that's reflected also in the fact that, the policy of the company is to have a very well covered dividend. So it has the financial resources to expand its operations.
Yeah.
And its exposure to the cladding problem is very limited indeed, because, as you can imagine, most of the houses we built were houses, single, double story houses.
Yeah. No, I would agree. Actually, there's one which we've talked about, which just we're worth just quickly touching, is Frankel Topping. Because apologies, I haven't raised that one, because I know we've talked about a lot. The shares have come down quite a bit. They do basically sort of financial services for very vulnerable people who have basically had accidents in the NHS or whatever, and then they also help manage their portfolios. Do you want to give us your latest on this one? Because it's a real specialist, and
the shares have fallen quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, no, they have, for sure. And I think if you look at the business services companies or PC companies, you know, there's no problems there. But Frankl itself has a number of issues similar to other IFAs,
yeah,
although not nearly as bad. So we still have a business which can attract funds under management,
yeah,
where the typical IFA is actually seeing people withdraw the funds as they want to pay down mortgages.
Yeah.
You know, they're hit by the cost of living crisis, where our typical client has just been awarded a huge amount of money and wants to invest it. But having said that, their risk tolerance has gone down a lot. It was very fortunate that Frankl set up money market fund earlier in the year.
Yeah.
But the fees on the money market fund are very considerably smaller than equities.
Yeah, of course.
So people are looking at that headwind. But from our perspective, at least we've got the funds under management. They're just not in an optimal place for our fees. So that's been a headwind. If you look at the IFA industry as a whole, it's been a disaster. You know, they all leveraged up to buy more IFAs. You know, some of that debt was at, you know, 14-15% for mezzanine debt.
Yeah.
At one stage, there were 50 companies out there buying IFAs, believe it or not, or trying to.
Yeah.
So the guilt has come off that lily. And again, you're caught in another, you know, very small cap company.
Yeah.
Where it only takes somebody with a bit of a redemption. Because we're pretty close to 30%, so we can't buy anymore.
Yeah.
However much we like the story.
Yeah.
But you know, in Frankl Topping, we do have a unique business. We provide pastoral care for 10 out of the 28 trauma centers, which enables us to choose the panel of solicitors. We've got a unique arrangement with Markel, a major US insurance company, to help solicitors fund their disbursements. And slowly but surely, we're creating businesses in all the various verticals to look after these severely injured people.
Yeah.
So we're providing short-term care, long-term care, witness reports, costings reports, which enable them to people to understand what type of care they need and for how long. And you're not actually delivering the service, you're providing the infrastructure enables the service to be delivered, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
So yes, we are a financial services company. Yes, we have the problems of financial services companies. And certainly when that national insurance bond came out yielding 6.2%, you know, everyone went, oh, wow.
Yeah, just migrated to it.
So, you know, that's been a headwind. And obviously, the margins on fund management, when you're talking about the marginal cost of an extra pound of revenue is relatively low. So that provides a headwind.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay.
I mean, that doesn't mean it isn't a good business. It's got no debt at the moment. It's doing fine. But I think it's true of pretty well every fund manager this year. You know, it's been a pretty bad bear market for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you look at all the share prices have been totally, you know, hammered, haven't they? I mean, you know, you look at Lion Trust, or you look at any of these ones,
Premier Mitons down something like 65%.
Yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely. Well, I mean,
it's certainly disappointing.
Yeah.
And particularly as going forward, as the earnouts come off in Frankl Topping, we should be able to, get some increased synergies as we go forward over the next couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you say, you never know. It might be one of those that other people are having a look at as consolidation happens in the asset manager, given its USPs, that highly differentiated
model it has. Just before we finish,
there's nothing out there like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And if you talk to a typical IFA, they're very jealous about this business because a typical IFA, believe it or not, only has market growth.
Yeah.
Winning and losing clients is virtually a zero-sum game. But we actually are a growth IFA.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good recurring revenue streams. And as you say, it gives you that that differentiation. So your retention rate is, and your churn's a lot, your retention rate's higher and your churn's a lot lower, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Retention rate is higher, churn is a lot lower.
Yeah.
And remember, we're looking after very vulnerable clients. So the portfolios are much more conservative than you would find with a typical IFA.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have to be, because many of the people who we're looking after will never have another job.
Yeah. Okay, good. Just big picture before we finish up. Just sort of like looking into 2024, are there any things that you'd sort of like suggest that investors should avoid doing, or, you know, sort of like to watch out for as we look for the next 12 months? I mean, I'm guessing most people are quite positive, so it's not being sort of too cautious, I get, is one thing. But just any things that, you know, easy mistakes that maybe investors should just be cautious on?
Well, I suppose the easiest piece of advice to give you is, if you see a private equity group float an IPO, avoid it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Too many people have been burnt in that respect.
Well, just remember, they've tried everything to sell this to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are, no private equity group really in their hearts wants to float something.
Yeah.
Ironically, we're one of the few that actually don't mind, because North Atlantic is very happy to own the company as a public company, just as a private company,
yeah,
and get rid of our private equity side. So Ten Entertainment, it IPO'd at, I think, £1.60 from memory. We had nearly all our shares when it got taken over at £4.12.
Yeah, okay.
But that's because we really believed in the business and continued to support it. But that'd be a general rule. I would still avoid companies with lots of debt.
Yeah.
I think, as debt gets rolled over, even with falling interest rates, it's going to get more expensive and it's harder to get. What advice would I give you? Gosh, hard to say.
I guess the thing is,
try and find things which have got reasonable, which are trading at big discounts to private market values. And there's a lot of that out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And don't try and be clever. Go for some pretty basic stuff.
Yeah. The problem I have with the sort of the, you know, a lot of those theses is deciding what is it a value trap or is it a value play? And it comes round to usually, can it be turned around, and whether you think is there a decent chance that it can, you know, reach success in the end of the end of the tunnel?
I think the answer is that the value trap is a very fair comment. The thing with us is, where you could say, well, Christopher, you know, some of these could be value traps, is we aren't passive. We just don't sit down and say,
yeah,
you know, carry on your happy lifestyle.
Yeah.
That is categorically not what we do.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the attractions of our funds.
Yes.
Is, okay, you can crib off our ideas. But you won't know what we're actually planning to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, these things don't all happen by accident, shall we say.
I know. And I would highlight that to investors. It's a real differentiator of Harwood. I mean, on a personal level, I was an investor in OG and a few years ago, and Christopher was on the board and turned that one round from, I think he got down to 22p and was sold out at about £3 or so eventually.
375.
Okay, well, there you go. And then there was,
but in all fairness, I didn't do the hard work. Jim Meredith, chairman, became executive chairman.
Okay, well,
he went from being Clark Kent to Superman in about 1 minute and did an outstanding job.
Well, to have a 10 bag your money, that's not a bad effort. And then on Crestchick, I think during the pandemic, it hit about sort of 60-70p and was taken out at £4.01, wasn't it, in last year? So I was
very proud of that one penny. I was the one who personally negotiated it.
You might have had something to do with a bit in between as well. I don't know. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Christopher. And if anybody wants to sort of like, invest in the Harwood funds, whether that's be the RX1 or the North Atlantic, how best to do that? I guess they're traded stocks, aren't they?
They're traded stocks. And, you know, and remember, we've got, Stuart at Dissian and Richard at Rockwood. And
yeah,
Richard just won the prize for being the best fund manager of the year. So I've got to work harder.
Yeah, I guess working in for the Harwood stable is there's high bars there, isn't it? You've got to be pretty good to survive that.
Well, I mean, if you look at 5-year performance, which I think is probably always the most appropriate thing, Harwood funds are 1, 2, and 3 in small cap.
Wow, fabulous. Okay, it says everything that. Yeah,
well, rolling. It's consistency of approach, and I think, as I said, it's a very collegiate group, and relatively speaking, now to have, you know, 5 people who are none of which are trainees, all working, in this space means we're one of the bigger groups in London.
Mm. Yeah, no, I would agree, and again. You know, I've been investing for over 30 years. And what I would say to highlight to investors is that inevitably there are companies that go through tough periods. But if it's got somebody with a Harwood sort of badge on the board or closes a shareholder, you can guarantee these guys roll their sleeves up and look to change the course and direction of that business to make it into a success. And there's been far too many instances where it has happened. So I tip my hat to you guys and a big thanks, I know, for a lot of investors who have benefited from that. So well done. Now, a big, and also I'll just say, I hope you have a great Christmas, Christopher, and successful new year, and very much looking forward in touching base in 6 months' time and going through how these companies have performed, probably a few more M&A and likewise any more recent buys. So thanks again, Christopher. It's been really, really insightful and very, very, useful for everybody.
Well, and thank you very much indeed for your time, and a very happy Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Brilliant. Thanks, Christopher.
Thanks so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off 2 or more select major appliances. Plus, get 3 Scott's Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.